we'll go on to Dr. Perdue. Thank you very much, Fred. Our next speaker, we'll move a little downstream to what's maybe coming to clinics near you very soon. Mike Perdue is the director of the influenza division at BARDA. Mike's been working in influenza since 1986, first for USDA, then for CDC, and now for HHS. Mike directs now more than 40 influenza contracts for advanced development of diagnostics or vaccines and antivirals, countermeasures for the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response. So, Mike, take it away.
Thanks very much, Joe. Thanks for the invitation. It's really great to be at this meeting and be a part of it. I consider it a very important meeting, and I'm happy to share some of the new stuff that we have ongoing and talk about our collaboration with NIAID and how we all work well together in the government. First slide. Back one, sorry.
How do you go back?
Right click. Okay, so today I was going to talk about a few things. One is I kind of wanted to frame the situation with seasonal versus pandemic vaccines a little bit and talk about a quandary that we face and you know, maybe get your input or what your thoughts are regarding how we go forward when we talk about these two different kinds of vaccines. And then I'll just touch on the landscape, which has already really been covered by Fred, but I'll give you where we are with licensed vaccines and what we hope to have licensed very, very soon in the next couple of years. And then I want to talk about a new initiative which results from a PCAST report on influenza vaccinology, which just got at the request of the President published and which we're working under to a certain degree, and then finish up with telling you what our new support for next generation vaccines. And also touch on what our past support has been. But I think we talk about the future of influenza vaccines, we need to discuss the needs for influenza vaccines. And I've kind of put a matrix here together, and this is a caveat is this is Mike Perdue's matrix. This does not represent the U.S. government, so don't go saying that we don't need more seasonal vaccines. The government says we don't need any more. So this is just my opinion for discussion purposes. But I think if you look at the questions are, you know, we have three different types of influenza vaccines existing today, seasonal, pandemic, and pre-pandemic. And the question is, you know, do we need more? Do we need better ones? Do we need them faster? And so I kind of put this matrix together to initiate the discussion. And really, if you talk about seasonal, you know, we almost every year are throwing away seasonal vaccine, unfortunately. So it's hard to say we need more. We would like to need more. We'd certainly like for the market to be larger and the coverage to be larger, but the reality is maybe we don't. Do we need better? Of course we do. I think everyone agrees we need broader protection so that we don't have to have, change the strain every year, the designation, and go through the process of revaccinating everybody every year with new vaccines. And faster, the next question, well, that's difficult to say under this current WHO scheme that we use, where we identify the circulating influenza viruses out there, and we say what should be in the vaccine based on that. It's a very timed, and so far it's been a relatively risk-free process, except when, you know, problems occur at the manufacturer. So if you just move to pandemic, do we need more? Well, I think everybody would say yes, but given what we just had with H1N1, for a mild pandemic, perhaps our need for more is less. But certainly with a severe pandemic, then the question would be answered much differently. Better, again, the same conundrum. Do we need better when, by all accounts, the H1N1 vaccine that we had was very good. But the key is faster, and we all agree that we definitely need to be able to produce pandemic vaccines faster. And so the third category, pre-pandemic, as you may or may not know, we have a pre-pandemic stockpile of a vaccine against the old bird flu. You remember bird flu from 5 years ago? Everybody was talking about bird flu. And we still have a stockpile for this virus. It hasn't gone away. It's still there, still circulating in Asia. And so it could be the next pandemic, as we have been saying for some time. Do we need more of that? Under current policy, we don't. We have enough pre-pandemic vaccine for H5 to meet the mandate that I'll tell you about. I think everyone would agree we need better and probably faster, although if you look at a pre-pandemic vaccine, you don't know what's coming. You're developing a vaccine for what you think is coming. And so this sort of frames the, you know, the, what we see as our future needs for discussion. So what's the difference in the seasonal and pandemic, and this is where the quandary comes, is that things that influence how we see the seasonal vaccine tend to influence how we look at pandemic vaccine production. And they're two different things. For pandemic, everybody's going to need pandemic vaccine for a severe pandemic, the developed world and the underdeveloped world. Whereas now most of the underdeveloped countries are less developed are not recommending seasonal vaccine for their population. We're hoping to change that paradigm globally, but for the moment, it's not. Hopefully, this is going to be the next pandemic will be a monovalent vaccine, not trivalent like we have for seasonal. But the key is we don't need it until you need it, and it's very difficult to measure the efficacy before you use it. There's no market for new strains, upcoming strain. There's no market for H5N1 vaccine, so it's sitting in the stockpile. Potentially, we're looking at a very different disease, pandemic versus seasonal. And currently, we know that we're almost certainly going to need an adjuvant for a pandemic strain vaccine with high mortality to make the vaccine go farther. And the other challenges we have is that it could essentially, if we want to protect the world, challenge our global filling and distribution capacity. And finally, the pathway to getting these pre-pandemic or pandemic vaccines license, it needs to be clearer. So those are some different aspects of the two different kinds of vaccine that we struggle with. And what we would like to do is, BARDA is essentially interested in emergency situations and pandemics, and so most of our support is for pandemic vaccines, although we have to go through the seasonal pathway in order to do this. So it kind of frames where we are. Fred's already talked about the technology landscape. I won't mention that. This is a very rich landscape. There's 58 different companies, universities, institutions on this slide. You can't read them, but the ones in orange are the ones that are producing various forms of pandemic vaccine. And basically, most of this is due to NIH funding from the early stage preclinical and phase one. Most of these companies exist because of NIH funding. And so where we pick up at BARDA is basically, I'll just make one point, and that was that we do have in the U.S. five licensed manufacturers, and we used all five of those when we ordered the emergency H1N1 vaccine for the pandemic. And so we're hoping to increase this number of licensed manufacturers in the U.S., and these are all egg-based licensed manufacturers in the U.S. And so one of the goals of BARDA is to change that paradigm, to move to the more advanced technologies to get them licensed. And so that's one of the directions that we head in. We look at it farther down the line. As Joe mentioned, our funding is late stage beyond phase one. And this is a cartoon that sort of shows, you know, you can have lots of products in the beginning at the pipeline, but ending up with one product at the end is a very expensive process, can cost as much as $700-800 million to get from a candidate to a licensed product. And so BARDA was set up to actually take the handoff from NIH, and we were given a lot of money to advance develop influenza vaccines and antivirals. And we work very closely with NIH. This dotted line is for a reason, because it's a bit porous, and it's not a hard and fast rule that everything has to stop at phase one for us or for NIH as well. So this is where we definitely work together and hand off products, take the handoff from NIH. We work under two strategies from 2005. These are under revision after the H1N1, but this was set up because of H5 bird flu. Two national strategies that are basically our operating manuals for getting the U.S. population ready for a pandemic from the Homeland Security Council, and the implementation plan, and then there's also an HHS implementation plan, which tells us what we needed to do. One of the things that we needed to do was to make sure we had enough eggs to make influenza vaccine for a pandemic. And so BARDA was funded to actually support the existing egg-based influenza vaccine architecture out there. In the U.S., there was only one manufacturer left in 2005 that was making egg-based vaccines in the U.S. at Sanofi. And so one of our goals was to support this egg-based manufacturer. So as taxpayers, you are proud owners now of millions of chickens every year around Pennsylvania, happily making eggs that go to the manufacturer and make egg-based influenza vaccines. So we funded a consistent and dependable egg supply. We funded infrastructure building, retrofitting activities to make vaccine manufacturers better, which I'll show you a little bit of. And then we funded the pre-pandemic egg-based vaccine stockpile, which you see there at the bottom, which you are also proud owners of anywhere from 20 to 120 million doses of pre-pandemic vaccine if it's ever decided to be used, because we also have an adjuvant stockpile now. So those two were funded by BART over the last 4 years or so. And then finally, we fund antigen-sparing approaches to make the vaccine go farther with using an adjuvant, which I'll show you a little bit of that information. But the other big thing we were funded for is the next generation. And the next generation in the U.S., at least, is considered the cell-based influenza vaccine production. And so we were getting a lot of money to support domestic cell-based vaccine production. And this is just some of the things that we support down at the bottom, both seasonal and pandemic production. We awarded six contracts initially in 2006. We're down to essentially four contracts now that are still working on the domestic cell-based vaccine production. We funded advanced cell development, cell regulatory approval, infrastructure building, adjuvant development, and clinical assessment, all related to developing a cell-based influenza vaccine on U.S. soil, which there's currently no cell-based influenza vaccine licensed in the U.S. Cell-based influenza vaccines have some advantages, which we're working under these assumptions that these are going to be solid advantages. Different cell lines in particular can be tested for efficiency, whereas an egg is an egg. You can't really make an egg more efficient. We can do a few things that make it a little more efficient at growing an influenza vaccine, but with cells you always have the opportunity to really experiment and try different things, different approaches, different cell lines. So it gives you a great advantage in terms of being able to grow influenza vaccines efficiently. Multi-use capabilities of the cell-based facilities. There are a number of advantages that are listed there that we use to fund our cell-based program. And this is sort of the crowning achievement to date for our program. So this is a facility in Holly Springs, North Carolina, which is a Novartis facility that's co-funded by the U.S. government. And it now has the capacity to make 150 million doses of a monovalent influenza vaccine in 6 months, which was the goal of the contract. And so the contract also allows us to, since we own 40% of this facility, and we have a long-term 25-year contract with Novartis, it allows us to make other vaccines that would be suitable for this facility if influenza is not what we need. But the contract allows us every year to order a batch of pandemic influenza vaccine if we want to, or some other, any type of vaccine that we think the government thinks would be needed to go into the stockpile or to respond to an emergency. So it's a good, it's a unique relationship between the public and private partnership with us owning, putting in about 40% of the cost of this facility. So one of the things that already is being made at this facility is the adjuvant MF59, which is the Novartis' proprietary adjuvant, and this is the only production facility for MF59 in the U.S. So if we need adjuvant for U.S., it's going to come from this facility, and it's already being produced under GMP conditions. So, as I mentioned, the adjuvants are going to be important because they are the best way to expand our availability of either pandemic or pre-pandemic vaccines. There are a number of levels, approaches that are being developed, as Fred mentioned. The oil and water emulsion adjuvants, such as MF59 and ASO3 from GSK, are widely viewed as an excellent choice for dose pairing, particularly for the H5 pre-pandemic vaccine. There's been a number of studies that show that these adjuvants work very well on the H5N1 stockpiles that we have to expand the broaden the activity and give dose-bearing activities. We've also funded different approaches, including egg-based oil and water candidate clinical trials that are very close to approval in the U.S. within the next, we hope, the next year or so, that an adjuvanted egg-based vaccine will be approved in the U.S. And then we collaborate very closely with NIAID on a so-called mix-and-match approach, where we can take adjuvant from one manufacturer and mix it with antigen from our vaccine from another manufacturer. And this is a difficult process, as you might imagine, with different companies having different goals. But we do have the authority to do this from legislation, and so we're well on our way to seeing how well this is going to work so that we're not stuck with one manufacturer's adjuvant used with the same antigen. So just I wanted to mention the report to the President on reengineering the vaccine enterprise, which was formulated about, I don't know when they started, maybe a year ago, after the H1N1. It looked at the whole vaccine production enterprise, this committee, the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, and made recommendations for where we should be with our vaccine enterprise. And so we're sort of working a little bit under this recommendation now in BARDA and some of the activities that we're doing to promote vaccine development. So if you look at the PCAS recommendations, they had two large segments of short-term impact and longer-term impact. And under short-term, they want to accelerate, as everyone does, the identification of new pandemic threats, as you might imagine. We want to shorten the time for availability of virus strains, and also potency and sterility testing, which will allow you to release vaccine quicker. If you know it's potent and you know it's sterile, then you can release it and it can go into distribution quicker. And they also suggest, as we have been talking about at BARDA some time, establishing a fill-finish manufacturing network so that we know we have enough filling and finishing manufacturing capacity to handle a pandemic. Longer-term impact include continuing our advanced cell culture development and also recombinant vaccine technologies, accelerating clinical research on live attenuated vaccines, which offer a promise of much wider or larger amounts of vaccine globally if we can get the live attenuated vaccine technologies transferred to developing countries, for example. Supporting adjuvant development and basic immunology research, and continue to expand our domestic vaccine manufacturing infrastructure, and develop more flexible investment strategies, and looking at a new management structure for our whole enterprise oversight for the flu vaccine. And so this comes from this report, and it actually summarizes sort of what they see as the difference between the existing technology here, the egg-based inactivated vaccine technology, and this is a timeline, time to release and distribution, cell culture-based technologies, and recombinant technologies. And it's a useful cartoon that you can get online if you want to look at the PCAS report. It shows the difference in timelines for release. And basically, the difference in cell-based is gained in the manufacturing of the bulk, which we think we could save 3 to 4 weeks perhaps once things started in manufacturing. And the time savings for the recombinant then comes in not having to optimize the strains, because if you have a recombinant system, you hopefully can just plug in the antigen and you're off and running. And so this is sort of, and so you could save anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks in the process, which, as you know, would have been very helpful during the H1N1 pandemic when we were a little bit late just because of the technology and having enough vaccine to cover the people that wanted it. So we're trying to shorten the time to manufacture, test, and license influenza vaccine, and we have a lot of collaborations that are funded now between the four agencies to develop high-producing vaccine seed strains, faster ways to produce reagents and measure potency, faster ways to measure sterility, and we've had some accomplishments with Novartis has a new rapid milliflex sterility test was just approved. As Fred mentioned, NIH has just let a new RFA to optimize vaccines strains and potency production. And BARDA is going to kind of coordinate this, and actually the goal is to get this then to the manufacturers. That's what BARDA is going to do, is to get all these advancements to the manufacturers so that they can make vaccine faster, release it faster, and get it to the public faster. So we also support the advanced development, and last month, about 3 weeks ago, the announcement of our support for two new companies, Novavax and Vaccinate, was in this news release. Large contracts to support the final clinical trials and licensure of these products. And recombinant vaccines, as Fred mentioned, offer several advantages, which I'll finish up with. There's no licensed recombinant vaccine currently, but there are a number of candidates, as you saw, under development and review at various stages. They hold the promise, particularly of much more rapid availability with the plug-and-play approach. So if you can get a platform approved by FDA that can be validated so that you know all you have to do is plug the antigen in and you're going to have a vaccine that's going to be safe and effective, then it holds a lot of promise. It's recommended by PCAST, and we're funding now three different approaches, which I'm going to finish up with some quick data just to show you that these things work well. But the key, I think, for recombinant and future recombinant is to keep the conversations going, keep it out there, you know, and work out the needed regulatory pathways that we're going to have, because we still don't have a licensed recombinant flu vaccine. So this is just some quick data from our new fundees. This is Novavax. This was a trial from Mexico where they looked at their VLPs, and this basically just measures antibody levels after vaccination. And the key here is that even at low concentration, down relatively low concentrations, 5 micrograms, we're getting good responses early on to the vaccine, and presumably this will result in protection. And this just is the data that shows that they met FDA criteria. The second thing that we're funding is this Vaccinate, which was an original fundee from NIH. And they use an approach where you actually couple the head of the HA, as Fred mentioned, to flagellin as a immunostimulator. So it's a pre-adjuvanted sort of a vaccine. And they've gotten some, to speak to Joe's question, they've actually done some studies in the elderly, and they have some really good data using this approach with their new vaccine and the seasonal hemagglutinin head. And this is in 65 year and older. And again, they're getting really good, strong immune reactions against these vaccines in the elderly. So this is really nice data. And the other one is, you mentioned Protein Sciences, and this is a company that we funded at BARDA now for the last couple of years, and they have taken an approach with their pandemic vaccine of adding a different kind of adjuvant. And it's very exciting because they're really getting, with this new adjuvant called GLA in SE, which has this chemical structure, which I won't go into, but by adding this to their vaccine, they've gotten some really strong seroconversion against the pandemic vaccine strains that they're developing, again, down at very low concentration. So the beauty is they're getting really good vaccine responses at low concentration with these recombinant vaccines. And this was actually a study that was funded by NIH, which suggested that their vaccine used as a primer could actually stimulate a much stronger response against another subunit vaccine later down the line. And so, again, the point is that this is a really good project that was handed off from NIH to BARDA, and we're using now the results from the studies that were funded by NIH to look at developing vaccines for the population, for countermeasures, for stockpiling. And just to finish up, the promise of recombinant technologies I've listed here, in my opinion, for improving influenza vaccines are the speed, which we talked about, flexibility, so you can actually maybe design different types of vaccines for different populations, scale up capabilities, downstream processing could be simplified so you're not dealing with either eggs or cells. You may have a much simpler process for formulating, stabilizing the vaccine, filling it, et cetera. And the key being that there may be some tailored approaches that we can use with the recombinant approach that we couldn't use with cells and couldn't use with eggs. So I think we're all excited about the potential for recombinant for target groups and universal and broader protection. Some of our websites, if you want to look at our recent awards, past awards is listed here. We also have some grants that are coming out on grants.gov, And then we had a recent, for example, FedBizOps posting for our new advanced research and development medical countermeasures for pandemic influenza for a new facility to support recombinant or cell-based vaccine production. So, sorry, I think I'm over time, but yeah. Thank you.